Welcome, Tribe, to the Cognitive Rampage. It's a talk session with Tony Jack the Bear Mance, master sound engineer, motivational speaker, and host of the Melbourne Real podcast, coming straight out of Melbourne, Australia. I enjoy listening to Melbourne Real, getting the podcast or getting the view of the world from the other side of the world over in Australia. It's really good listening to those guys. So I suggest everybody find Melbourne Real. You can find that podcast on YouTube as well. He has recorded 6 platinum tracks, a few gold, worked with a list of artists that are too long to mention, from Australia to UK to the US, all over the world. JackTheBear.com.au. Maybe you're lucky enough to have a track mastered by Jack the Bear, master sound recorder and engineer. Jackie Jack.
Oh my lordy lord, we connect to the beautiful internet. How are you, Adam?
I am great, Jack, man. It's great to virtually meet you, man.
It's great to virtually meet you as well, dude. Your podcast was awesome, man.
Thanks, man.
And your Rogan one was killer.
Holy shit, man, did I get some help for that one. You know, believe it or not, I was working in 2 rehab facilities, and before I got back from L.A., I was let go from both of them.
Damn. Yeah, because you tell it, because you, I guess the establishment just don't like hearing it the way it is, man. It's just as simple as that. It's much worse over there from what I can imagine, but over here, boss, when it comes down to drug rehab, I mean, I'll give you a quick example. I have it my own foundation. I raise money for charity, and one of the charities I raised money for was for a rehab facility in the country that I saw on a TV show. I watched this doco, and I was in tears watching it. I couldn't believe it. Right, there was this situation where they said, "Listen, we have these beds here that we can help these kids in a town that was ravaged by ice or crystal meth." Yeah. But the government said, because the funding is for alcohol addiction and not for drugs, those beds have to remain there for alcohol addicted kids, even though right now the town is ravaged by meth. Right?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I said, okay, well, this is just ridiculous. So we raised $1,000 that day and sent it to them, and that, which was additional funding, you see, which then they could use to help treat some kids. And that gave at least one kid partial treatment, at least to help them dry out. It wasn't enough to take them through the rehab, but at least to, you know, get them off the drugs. Yeah?
Yeah. How can people find that charity? How can they donate or help you out with it?
Well, man, what I do is every one day, every 4 to 6 weeks, just depending on the schedule allows, I have a Facebook page, and I just open it up and I say, hey guys, today I'm going to master records, because I'm a master engineer. That's my thing. And I will do it for a donation of whatever you want to give me. And all the money I raise on the day, I give to a different charity. And I'm always looking for small grassroots, not the corporate ones, you know, just the ones where you know that, you know, all the money or most of the money is going to be going directly to help the people they're meant to help, not for the $400 bottle of wine for the CEO and the $300 hooker that's going to accompany him to try and get business for the next junket. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I know exactly what you're
saying. So what I'll do is, you know, we should exchange emails and shit like that, and I'll send you the information and the Facebook page and stuff, and, you know, so that's how that works, buddy. That's just been my own initiative that I started about 3 years ago, because, you know, I've been very fortunate that in my business, the music business, it's tough as fuck, man, and I managed to make a living. I've got a sweet life, dude. I've got a sweet fucking life. Eh?
I promoed you intro here when we were starting the show that we'll edit in, but I talked about a little bit about your music history and kind of how you got into it and some people you worked with too. So tell me about this beautiful life, Jack.
Well, listen, I'll tell you a bit of it. Hang on a second. Hey, honey.
Connie.
Hang on a sec. Let me get my headphones because we gotta move this into another room. So just bear with me, Mr. Adam.
No worries, my friend. I'm gonna take a medicine break.
Okay. Can you come here for a second, please?
Yeah.
Hi, Adam.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you still there?
Oh yeah.
I think I've lost your video.
Yeah, on purpose.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. You're not having a wank on me or anything, are you, man?
Not at all.
Okay. Because I'm, all right. All right, you want to know about my beautiful life? Okay, let me tell you, all right. This is what makes you beautiful, for starters. Hey, Connie, I want you to meet my fiancée, Connie.
Hi,
Adam.
How are you, Adam?
Adam, a.k.a. Cognitive Rampage. I saw him on Joe Rogan podcast, and we've been following each other on Twitter. And he's a motherfucker. He's a great guy. So we're just connecting, getting to know each other better. This is what makes my life beautiful, man. Right here.
I love it, man. My wife, but I would say the same. I'm only half as good as what I do, and half as better because of her. She's in the other room, hanging out the same. It's good to meet you, Connie.
Nice to meet you too.
So I'm going to have a bit of a chat with Adam.
Yeah,
is that all right?
I'll chat to you later.
All right, baby. All right, love you.
Bye. All
right. So that's what makes my life beautiful.
Oh, I love it, man.
And my three kids. So basically, what else makes it beautiful? I think, Adam, I think I'd be best. The best way you describe me is I'm a late bloomer. I'm a late bloomer in life, dude. I'm not going to sit here and start. Oh, that's a whole sad story. My life changed about 5 years ago, basically, in a nutshell. So I'll give you just a nice 7-inch. Radio edited version, okay?
All right. If you want, go as long as you need to, man.
Yeah, okay. But essentially, man, here it is. I was in an unhappy marriage, was drug addicted, was extremely overweight to the tune of, in roughly pounds, approximately 160, 170 pounds overweight. I had a DMT trip, and that was it. That was the end. That was my complete, utter breakdown and reconstruction. Yeah. And it set me on a completely different path in life. It set me on a more spiritual life. It got me to get healthy within my mind, my body, my spirit, which I'm still, that's an ongoing process. And only recently I've just formalized to be a motivational speaker. Why? Because I want to serve people, man. I just realized, you know, that is the ultimate reason we're here, is to serve people. So anyway, I thought, in order for me to be able to do this, to be, you know, first of all, you need to be congruent in the message, which means you've had to have lived a certain way. You know, it's no good me saying, hey, guess what, guys, I lost 100 pounds, you know, only to be a fat fuck in 3 months, you know.
Right.
I think I needed the passage of time for all this stuff that I espouse, if you will, to be integrated so that I am who I am. That's it. There's none of this, okay, well, the mic is on, the camera's on, go. You know, and then when it's done, it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I took my time, Adam. I just took my time because I wanted to prove to myself first that change was lasting, that person that I was espousing to be was me. Yeah. So I started a little podcast recently, and it's interesting now because because Rogan's coming out next month, and we're trying desperately to get onto him. So Eddie Bravo, who's his best mate, and yeah, we follow each other on Twitter. I hit him up and I said, listen, I don't want to be that guy, Eddie, because I've done work for Eddie too, right? We've had dealings with his music, his band. Not for a while now, but we have, anyhow.
Yeah.
But and I said, hey, Eddie, I don't want to be that guy, because I don't want to come across like a douche, you know, like, you know, that we're friends, we whatever, but no response. Then I hit up his manager, Jeff Glickman, or Sussman, whose name is, nothing. So I hit up Brian at London Reel, because I do Melbourne Reel, right? So Brian Rose, who does London Reel, he's had the connection. I said, hey, Brian, can you help a brother out? And he just got back and said, hey, man, he's just so hard to get on to. He's just, you know, can't help you. Now I'm just – so anyway, I put it out in the universe, and if it happens, it happens, man. I'm just trying all – all avenues that I can. But the problem is you don't want to come. You can imagine how many requests that guy gets for all sorts of things, and he can't do everyone. He can't see everybody. It's hard. It's hard. I understand that. I completely get that. But you don't want to be that guy. You know,
right. Yeah. Well, when I met him, it was hard not to be that guy the same way. You know, I've been an avid, you know, fan for a long time. And when I tell you the story by chance, met him 2 days after a psilocybin purging experience. So what was strange, I want to get back to your DMT experience and you know, your opening to that. So I'm going to go back there. But the reason Joe connects with it was so strange. I was just visiting California. My daughter was out there at Pepperdine University doing a volleyball camp. And we dropped her off. We drove up and down the coast, vagabonding, doing the thing. And we pick my daughter up. We go up to the Redwood Forest, and we're hanging out there, checking out the trees. And I can tell my daughter really wants to see L.A., you know, Melrose. So I'm sitting. I said, you know, honey, let's just go back a day early so we can go walk Melrose. She's 15, you know, and let her hang. So we go back a day early that night. We said, you know what, let's just Uber down to Improv where it starts off. We started there. My daughter gets out. She looks at the sign, and she goes, Dad, the Improv. I thought I wasn't going to see him because we were leaving before I saw him. So now it's about sneaking my daughter into the bar. So I sneak my daughter in the bar. I shit you not. We get in there, front row. You know, he drops his thing. There's three more comedians left. I say, you know what, now or never is the fucking chance, man. And so I just walked out, and like you said, you don't want to be that fucking guy, you know? And he had tucked himself in the corner of the bar, surrounded by Don Marrera and these guys. I'm thinking, fuck, I'm going to be a jackass here. You know, so I walk over anyway, mumble some shit. It's so loud, he can't hear me. By then, I had just given up. And I went, you know what? Fuck it. It's weird now. And I turned to walk away, and Joe's like, no, wait, man. Come back. You know, and just told him what it was I had to say, and he was cool enough to give me that chance. But that 2 days prior at the Joshua Tree, I went on an experience, and I asked a question. You know, I was seeing the atrocities in mental health and what was happening, and somebody needed to say something. I couldn't deal with it anymore, and so I wasn't sure. And so I went into that psilocybin experience with that question: what do I do? Do I continue with the licensure and this Medicare practicing clinical practice, or do I take this other route that I feel is something different? And it revealed to me exactly not to. And then 2 days later, I get the optimal chance. And if you watch Joe Rogan, all I did was talk about how bad the system was. I promoted nothing about what I did. Anytime he gave me a chance to, I downplayed it. I just stayed focused on the chemical incarceration, addicted to the process and the bullshit and those atrocities, man.
Yeah. That's right. You know what? The other thing I recently learned about addiction, and I thought this was fascinating. This guy was telling me about the reason why people have a cigarette is not because the pleasure of the cigarette, but it's for the cessation of the craving. So, you know, so you feel like a cigarette, it's because you're not having it. It's not so much the physical, it's a cessation of craving. It's kind of a different way of looking at it, but I could see what he meant. It was just an interesting insight, anyway, an interesting way of looking at things. So, anyhow,
well,
I'm glad.
Your DMT trip, my friend, I got to know. I mean, you skipped over it so fast, and I both know how deep it goes. So I got to know more about this.
Okay, all right, this is as much as I remember, okay, man, because it was 5 years ago. So, but this is what I got from it, okay? Other than the fact, first of all, I remember the oscillation. You know, as soon as I hit the pipe and I took a big fucking hit, man, straight away this oscillation, right? It just into super high frequency, and then I remember the fractals, incredibly bright, vivid colors, just fuck like nothing I've seen, and then hearing this cellophane paper, was it this crackling sound, like going through cellophane paper? And then, dude, it was like being in this world that was painted by the Warner Brothers cartoon, you know, thing. And I don't know if it was my higher self, but this being that looked like a cross between one of my best friends and my dear mum. She's gone now, but it looked like her and one of my best friends rolled into one. It was weird, man. It was really weird. Like a hybrid, yeah, of the two of them. But I could see them both at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, so essentially what I got out of it, Adam, was that I was full of shit. Basically, it was telling me that I was beautiful. I was perfect the way I was. There was no need for me to put on whatever front I was putting on the world, because that's not what people wanted. That's not what I was about. And it was okay to be myself. You know, just be okay with who you are, because who you are is fucking perfect. You know, so what are you fighting it for? Like, this is ridiculous. You just need to get over all of that, remove all that, take, you know, just let you be you and let that come out, rather than be something that you think other people want to be, because that's not what it's about. That's not what they want to see, and that's not what you should be doing. That was really what it was about. And seeing that love was the most, you know, love was everything. You know, that everything was love. That love was just, and the whole, thanks, baby. I appreciate that. Thank you. And the connectedness of the universe and all things, that the illusion of separation is just that. You know, everything is one thing. And that's what inspired me to get the tattoo here, of which reads, I am you, you am I.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. So, you know, and that we're here to love and create, basically. And then, and hence why I got tattooed here, just to remind, you know, love. Create.
Oh yeah, love and create. When just watching you talk takes me back to that last one for me at the Joshua Tree. And that same idea of this perfect symmetry, and all things are where they are supposed to be, you know, unless you perceive them not to be, they still are. You know, these this perfectness. I'd never felt so purposefulless and purposeful at the same time. You know, that it's hard to experience that. And like you, I also got that, all right, listen, for 10 minutes, it seems like 10 hours, listen, you're full of shit, okay? And so, you know, that honest revelation that those psychedelics give you in those visions, it's almost like it's perfect timing, even those moments we take them.
Yeah, yeah. And so it set me on a different course, man. It changed me. And so now, you know, at first there was a little bit of people saying, oh man, you've become a bit, what's this, all this fucking love and shit? And yeah, because I'm a serial hugger. Yeah, I think too. Look, man, I'm a big guy. I'm 6 foot three. I'm 6 foot three. I'm 250 pounds. Okay. I'm 52. I'm fucking concrete, man. You know, I'm a badass, but I'm the gentlest fucking soul. And people just going, oh man, it just, you're covered with fucking tattoos. What is it with you, man? I said, that's me. I'm a sweetheart. I'm a fucking sweetheart, and I'm letting the world know I'm a fucking sweetheart, man. I'm completely comfortable with that.
I think you're a fucking sweetheart. I love it, man. I can't keep going back. I want to know what was happening with Jack prior to the DMT trip.
Prior to that, I was married. I got married to a woman as a last-ditch attempt to get my father's approval at 29 years of age. My father came from a long line of academics. My life was always about my dad's approval, always. That's what it was all about. Everything was all about that. And I never got there because I got into music. He didn't want that. I was all juiced up for a law degree. Didn't want to go down that path, so my dad didn't want me to do it. He was very upset with me. And also with my dad, it was about, appearances, you know, because all of his friends' sons and daughters went to university and got whatever they did. That's all he understood. He never could wrap his head around the concept of what I did, which is, you know, tweaking music to make it sound good. He saw that as a great hobby. You know, that's why I said, get a law degree. That way you can make a lot of money, and then that'll allow you to buy all this wonderful equipment, and you can enjoy, you know, all that. He just couldn't see how being artistic was relevant and valid in the world. And that was the constant struggle. And that's one of the things I do in the talking, the motivation talking, because I predominantly talk to young, creative, artistic kids who are at college or about to go into college, and the talks about, you know, challenging their thinking into saying, hey, listen, you know what? Being an artist is relevant. It's valid. It's a beautiful thing. Following your heart's desire is everything. Job satisfaction is everything. I know, because I've been there. I know the struggle, you know, and I've got through it. So, hey, I did it. You can too. Anyway, so I got married. I liked the girl. Don't get me wrong. She was a nice girl, but I wasn't in love with her. I never was. And so but I thought it would change. You know, I thought, hey, old generation say, you know, love is something that grows. You know, it'll happen over time. It'll be fine. So I thought I was set, you know. And thinking at 29 and a half, you know, it's about time. Society tells me this is time I've got to stop drugs, stop partying, stop, you know, all the shit, and get down, get solid, get the foundation in life, get a mortgage, have the kids, blah, 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 blah. And, I got the kids, got the white picket fence.
All the supposed to's in life, right?
Everything. But that was my life, dude. That was my life. My life was all about pleasing others. Yeah? Living up to other people's expectations and making everyone else fucking happy.
And lost my authentic self in the process.
Absolutely. I never got a chance to know who my authentic was. I never really got to know him until recently. I only got to meet myself 5 to 6 years ago. And my real self.
And even through all that music success, still wasn't there.
Mm-mm. No, man. I was laughing on the outside, crying on the inside. And I could never accept anything from anyone, you know, compliments or anything. And I was always a loner, you know. I would be the guy at the party and I'd be having a good time, but fuck, I just didn't want to be there, man. You know, it wasn't fun, you know. And it was just very hard to, and, you know, and I was never unfaithful to my wife, but I had a lot of, if I didn't have my gal pals, I reckon I would have been dead by now, you know, because that was my outlet for having any kind of intimacy. You know, there was no sexual intimacy, but I was able at least to express myself, because I couldn't even talk with my ex-wife. We just could, you know how you and your wife, I was like, you know, you could sit down and you could just hang and just talk shit. You could talk about anything, whether it's serious, ridiculous, whatever. We couldn't ever do that. We just could never do that. We would only talk about kids and finances. That's it.
That's not life. You know, you got to be able to and sit down and ask the questions. You know, all the posing life questions, all the wonders of questions, and explore all those things.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, man. When it came to, I saw sex with my ex-wife as a chore.
That's when it's over. It's done.
And neither of us had the balls to say, hey, is there something wrong here? But because there was no arguing, because the bills were paid, because everything was running smoothly, it was like, listen, let's not rock the boat. Let's not make it, you know, it's shit. It's terrible. It's no fun. But fuck it. You know, we're not fighting. It's just, let's just, and that's when I got to the point where I was, you know, 70 kilos overweight, and I sat down with my doctor, and he said, he actually had quite a black sense of humor about him. He goes, listen, he goes, you're 40. He goes, look, you're nearly 47. It's not a matter of when you have a heart attack, obviously, it's when. And he goes, and you might be one of the lucky few, he said, that may get the quinella, the double of having a heart attack and a stroke at the same time. How does that sound to you? So he had a black sense of humor, but he drove home a very it was a very, very big moment, that one, because that's when he said, you're not going to see 50, you're not going to see your children grow up. That's just, I'm just telling you right now that you are on a one-way ticket to that, my friend, unless we intervene today.
And how long was the before the DMT experience, between here and that and the moment?
About 3 months.
So about 3 months to build yourself up to it, or figure that's the change, you know, or was there this moment?
At that point, I didn't know what DMT was, okay? I had no idea. But when he told me that, I'd realize, okay, I need to do something. So So what I started to do now, up until this time, I've been on a spiritual path. When I say spiritual path, I've been on an inquiry since the age of 29. Now, people say that's the Saturn returns. I don't know whether that's true or not, but nonetheless, 29, I remember, was when I started. First, I started asking myself the questions, why am I here? What's this all about? You know, is there a God? Who runs this thing? Just all the questions of life, you know. And so I started practicing all these different kind of, you know, for 3 years I was a Taoist and I was vegetarian, and then I looked into Buddhism, and I even went down the born again Christian route, my friend. I have to admit it.
Well, it's funny, we just posted a podcast today where my cohort and I talked religion, and I get pretty adamant about separating the idea of religion, but I even explained on there, like you did, like how I almost embraced it, then had to deny it all to kind of come to this spiritual place that you keep referencing, and I think I reference too.
Yeah, and so after trying all this different stuff, I said, okay, well, at that point, then I started thinking, because I was thinking about my immortality, right? So I thought, well, you know what? Maybe it's too late for me. So I need to find a place where I can be good within myself, you know, at least so when I'm, if, you know, if there is a maker to me, I want to be prepared. I'm not going to take the risk of there not being a maker to answer to, you know. And so I looked into it further and further. And as I looked into it further, then I came across a documentary called Zeitgeist. And then I saw Zeitgeist, and that was like, whoa, dude.
For everybody, man, who's listening, he's representing, there's three series of Zeitgeist, right, that you're referencing. And which you watched the first one where it's about the spiritual stuff.
And the first one was The Greatest Lie Ever Told.
Yeah, Jesus and the comparison with Horus.
Yeah. And that was just crazy stuff, dude, crazy. So then that got me on a further line of inquiry, you know, about money system, about Illuminati, about all this kind of stuff. And, of course, it scared the shit out of me, you know, listening to David Icke and listening to reptilians and shapeshifters and fuck blah, 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 sleepless nights, God knows what else. And but during all this time, I was hanging out with these hippies, these esoteric dudes, you know, these new ageists. And I really actually liked them, man, because they were just really gentle, kind, loving folks, and they seemed to be quite a congruent bunch. And so it appealed to me, you know, on the surface, initially when I first met them. And so, you know, and then people saying, what the fuck you doing, man? You got dream fucking catchers in your place and burning incense and crystals and shit. But I said, well, you know what, man, this feels a whole lot better than the way things used to be. The smell is nice. And if whether it works or not, I don't know. I don't give a fuck, man. They're cool, you know. Leave me alone. And that's when I came across Rogan stuff. And you know, just these little short videos I saw of his, just through true chance, although there's no such thing as chance, as we know. And I just saw, you know, Rogan's little videos, and they were like another wake up call. That I just loved the message this guy was pumping out. I thought, fucking hell, look at this guy. You know, he's telling it how it is. He's real. He's a man's man. Fuck, I love this guy. You know, fuck, he's, you know, this guy to me was like redefining the alpha male, if you will. And so I started looking further into him, watching his podcasts and further from there. Anyway, I'm getting to DMT bit. That's where I first heard about DMT, Joe Rogan talking about it. And then I watched The Spirit Molecule. And one day these hippie friends of mine, you know, I was talking to them about it, and I said, DMT, yeah. We can facilitate that. I said, oh, really? I said, yeah, you know, it comes from the acacia plant. We've got this stuff from the acacia plant. It's the best shit. I said, I had no idea. And I said, my friend, you don't find DMT, DMT finds you.
Yeah, just like it sounds, seems like it did.
Yeah.
Once you were open to it, right? Like once you were open to that possibility.
I was there. I was ready. And I said, no. And I said, well, we need to prepare. We need to prepare for it. We need to get you prepared for it. So, you know, so
what
it was
just a matter. What did they do for the preparation?
Ideally, it's, you know, it's fasting and stuff. And then it's about creating the space. So it took, you know, we went up to this place up in Belgrave, which is outside of Melbourne in the Dandenong Ranges. And this friend, this guy, Adion, who's a friend of mine, he said, look, I'll facilitate this. So it was a matter of, you know, creating a sacred space for protection from the spirits and burning white sage and all done in a very shamanic kind of way. And also just about intent. And at the time when I was taking it, my thing was, you know, who am I? That's what I just want to know. Who am, you know, who am I? What's this all about? Tell me what it's all about and who am I? And it told me in no uncertain terms, you know, but it took a while for it to integrate because what it told me just seemed so unbelievable to me. So like, I knew it was telling me truth because I knew it was true, but it was like, really? That's, I'm that awesome. I'm that amazing. I'm that loving. Really? Whoa. Okay. I need time for this to sink in. And it took about 6 months, man. It took about 6 months. And, you know, and so look, man, I'm still working on myself. I have mentors that I work with and, you know, I'm still as frail and fucked up as anyone else. So as I tell the kids, man, I have great solace in knowing I'm just as fucked up as you, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, they're neurotic as they are going through it. You mentioned the word there, the spiritual word. And, you know, even for myself, when I was putting out the first book, I Am, and I've heard Tim Ferriss even talking about it, you know, that even when they've experienced the psychedelic experiences, it's even hard for them to deny this idea of the spiritual thing. And Tim talked about a lot about having a lack of a better term. So even he began to use that spiritual word and doesn't like to. And even I think Joe even stays away from the spiritual aspect, you know, of something. And, but even myself, you know, you mentioned that spiritual aspect. And I kind of want to mean, you know, what does that spiritual aspect mean to you? Where did it incorporate for you in your life? How does that define in your world?
I think if anyone asks me, how do you define being spiritual? The best way I would define it is doing everything you can to raise your vibration. So it's just about bettering yourself, you know, being healthy, healthy of mind, healthy of spirit, healthy of emotion. And you know, it's not, I don't think it's a rocket science thing, man, or it's a religious thing. It's really basically just be a nice fucking person. And we all know how to be a nice fucking person, but it's to be nice to yourself first and foremost. I think the hardest person to be nice to be honest with, to be objective about is you. You know, self-esteem is the biggest fucking challenge, you know, the final frontier for everyone. It all comes down to that. Why is the people are the way they are? It's self-esteem, man. It's lack of self-worth. You know, oh, I can't have this because I'm not worthy of it. You know, I can't be all that because I'm not good enough. I'm too fat. I'm too ugly. I don't have enough money. Whatever it is. And everyone, and myself, man, you know, I'm not saying that I'm a fucking ninja. I'm better at it than I was.
Yeah. I love the reference term. I'm not a fucking ninja. I love that. It's, you talk about the power of dialogue, which is I talk about a lot. And you're right. People, when it comes down to just loving, as we were talking on the religious podcast, be in love. I think a lot of it starts with that humble idea, that ability to be humble in yourself, that humble brings learning, brings love, brings kindness. And, you know, I think a lot of people mistake being humble as being meek. And I see being humble as being powerful, like a raised vibration almost.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. I don't think being kind means you're a doormat or that you have to. Yeah, exactly. Just kind of be cowering in the corner. Not at all. Not at all. And again, this is why, you know, I like someone like Joe. I mean, Joe's a man's man. You know, he eats meat. He fucking trains. He hunts. He's a fucking man. Yeah. But he's a fucking sweetheart too. You can see it. You can see it. And he's not afraid to fucking express it. You know, it's interesting. At around the time when I started getting to Rogan, I was seeing this life coach who facilitated a lot of when I left my ex, she helped facilitate that whole process. Not as in facilitate, as in she told me to leave or that was my decision made on my own accord, but just in terms of emotional support through it and just through getting me out of my rut, yeah. And I said to her, you know, she said to me once, I said, who are the people you look up to? You know? And I said, well, Joe Rogan. And she said to me, well, you know why you like him? And I said, oh, for this. And she said, yeah, but the aspects in him are the same aspects in you. that's why. He said, that's why, you know, we like people. You know, I like you because you're like me. We see each other's good as bad traits in people too. You know, we see, we don't like because we see aspects of them that in ourselves that we don't particularly like. It's a reflection. So yeah, man, the whole spiritual thing, it's, I don't go around waving a banner saying I'm spiritual. I think I'd rather let the, you know, actions speak louder than words when it comes to that. And I think, as I said, spring spiritual is about raising your own vibration and bettering yourself, because the better version of you you can be, the better things you can do for the world. And I've learned late in life, we are here to serve. Ultimately, that's what we're here for, Anna. We're here to serve people. By serving ourselves first, then we can serve others. And that's really what it's about.
Yeah, you spoke to that notion of self-esteem, you know, and that belief of someone, you know, having either a negative concrete belief about themselves, you know, this pessimistic view about who they are. You know, they create this narrative in their mind. You know, they've experienced certain things in life, and so these experiences kind of set the tone to their narrative and define the phrase that I can't stand that a lot of people say, which is, that's just who I am. You know, they're stuck in this negative world, and their response to it is, that's just who I am. You know, this shut out to the natural plasticity of the human development.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, man. So that's pretty much my, you know, my deal for now. So, you know, what are we doing here anyway? We're recording this, are we?
Yeah, all of it's recorded, man. Yeah, we're putting this out. We do about 3 or 4 podcasts a week. This nobody will see unless you want me to put it on YouTube. I'll put it up on our channel, Cognitive Rampage. But
no, man, no, you put it out because I think this is it's important that we get good vibes out in the world, man.
And yeah, it's the conversations that I'm trying to get out. You know, they started with me talking to people, you know, getting deep, you know, random people, mentors, etc. And then I'm thinking, man, other people should hear the advice I'm getting from this guy and this person's story, you know, so it's about sharing your story.
Yeah, man, I think so. Ultimately, we are all storytellers. And even though for the most part, some people, you know, 80% of people don't care about your story, and 20%, particularly if it's a bad story, and 20% probably are happy, you know. But I think if a story has value, then it's a good story to tell, and it's a good story to get out there, because I think we can severely underestimate how many people we can help through our story, particularly if it's an inspiring story and a positive story. You know, it's like, I'll give you an example. On my Facebook page, I love to put out little videos and talk about little health things or just things to consider in terms of life, just my own musings, if you will. And then you see, oh, this, you know, 3 likes. But fuck me, dude. You know what? I'll get about 20 people over the course of a month say, hey, man, I saw that video. That was fucking awesome. Now, that person, even though we're friends on Facebook, I've never seen them on my newsfeed. They didn't like the video or the post. But I think the thing is that there's a lot of people that lurk and you are unaware of the reach of how far it goes. So therefore, you know, I take all that shit with a great sense of responsibility, you know. And so, yeah, man, it's good to get out there, because I think if I was in a situation where I was feeling lost and like shit, I'll tell you what, there's a fuckload more out there, man, a fuckload more. And we all have these pivotal moments in our life where we have the aha moment that's like, oh, fuck, and it sets you on a different trajectory. Now, who's to say that one of your podcasts or what we're talking about today is going to be heard by some kid, I don't know, maybe in Punxsutawney, Wisconsin, if there is such a fucking place as Punxsutawney, you know, checking us out quite fucking randomly, and we just said something, and that one thing just makes them go, oh, fuck, you know? We don't know.
No.
We don't. But you know what? If it did, I think we've done a good thing. So, you know, that's why it's worth just doing it, man, getting it out there.
I agree, man. And, you know, if the conversations are happening, then it's what's right. And I like to tell people, once you hear something, you can't unlearn what you now know.
True. True. You know.
Once they hear, you know, your experience and how it brought you there and how DMT changed your life, and maybe they're a view of, you know, anti-psychedelics or anything else, you know.
Yeah.
I think people hunt the purpose. When I like to believe that we don't find purpose, that purpose finds us through the way we structure our life and the way we live it. You know, you talked about this passion, you know, that this aha moment, and I think that comes, we have this experience and something happens and it creates this passion. But the only way we can keep feeding that passion with such enthusiasm is to get competent in whatever it is that experience gave us.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's also important for people to do what they love in life, Adam. You know, I think, you know, as I tell kids, I said, it's your fucking birthright to be happy now in your 20s. You know, now when you're, you know, you haven't even hit your prime yet, but still, you know, you have a fucking birthright to be happy. And then your job right now is just to find that. And if you haven't worked it out by now, in 2021, you know what? It's fucking okay. It's okay. It's no big deal. There is no fucking race in life, you know? And if you want to use that metaphor, the tortoise won.
Yeah. Well, so and in America, I mean, it's like the race is in fast forward. I mean, these kids are pressured so much from structure of school. They can't even be creative. You know, it takes me your tattoo creative there. Another guy had an ayahuasca experience coming on the show next week, Damino from YouTube, but he talked about, like you tattooed there, the power of create is our job here is to create, and with more creation comes more knowledge, comes more love, and that spreading, and they've taken the kids and structured their fucking life. They can't even just be a fucking kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You look at kids and the way they grow up and the way they play, they don't give a fuck about anything, man. They're just in the moment. Yeah, you want to talk about being present? Look at kids, man. That's it. They're not even thinking about fucking dinner time or fuck. Just they're right in it, man, doing their fucking shit, and they're having a blast, right? And then, you know, as they get older, all that shit gets knocked out of us, man. Yeah.
Well, and then they tell you all the supposed tos. You're supposed to be this by this, this by this.
Dude, when I was fucking 13, you know, that was when my dad said I was a man. That was it. My childhood, as far as he was concerned, that was it. You're a man today. And to signify that, he got me a fucking suit at 13. And yeah,
welcome to the world, son.
Absolutely. My dad was he was staunch, hardcore, fucking man's man shit, right? So it was about suits and ties and fucking cufflinks. 30 inches old and wearing a fucking cufflinks.
No, I hate to laugh, but Jesus.
No, laugh. It's laughable. It's the stuff of fucking, you know, comedy. And so I rebelled hard, man, you know, and that's why I said, when I was 15 years old, and I'll never forget this motherfucking day as long as I live, I made a promise to myself, three things. One, I would never fucking wear another suit and tie again. I would have a job where I'm wearing a collar and tie. I would never do 9 to 5. And I would not work for the man. I'm going to find what I love to do, because I realized at that age, I remember this fucking commercial for Mars Bars. I don't know if I had the same jingle over there, but the Mars Bars commercial said 8 hours work, 8 hours rest, and 8 hours play. Mars a day, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, on that fucking theory, that means that 50% of my waking hours are going to be spent working. That's a fucking big percentage of my waking hours, so I better do something my fucking life. And that's when I said, I'm doing music, man, because I was always into music. Fuck this. So I did. So I rebelled hard, man. You know, I rebelled fucking hard. Well, super duper hard.
I mean, I'm watching you, like, live that, because I feel that. I try to live that daily. And I think your same three rules you set at 15 are the same rules I set in my life and have tried to live. And they're almost the same, right? It's just fuck the man, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, because I was living under him hardcore, and I couldn't wait to get the fuck out, let me tell you. You know?
They take your life. They take your life slowly.
Yeah. And so that's why, you know.
And you chose music. Why music? What took you there? What was the first band? Take me back to the.
All right. Well, the first record that rocked my world as a kid, man. Okay, as a kid, there was a show called Happenings. This is 1970, right? Happening 70 on the telly. And it used to be all these, you know, film clips, Australian bands, international bands. But the first band I heard that rocked my fucking world, man, that absolutely, and I was 7 or 8 years of age, was a Dutch band called Focus. I would have been about 10. Sorry, about 10. Band called Focus, track called Hocus Pocus, right?
Yeah.
And that the riff, if you check it out, man, you check out the riff of that fucking tune, it just blew my fucking world apart, man. I was like, what the fuck is this? This is fucking crazy! So, I just got excited. Just that was the moment then the music really, really changed my life and just made me go, wow, like in a big, big way. And so I just started watching the show, and then I sort of getting, and then, you know, Sabbath, Zeppelin, Stones, all this kind of shit, man. You know, that was my musical diet.
Is this them?
You know. Oh, you're fucking killing me, man. You're killing me.
Taking you back, baby.
Oh, man. Oh, man, I'm getting a heart on here. Stop it.
Oh, I love it, man. So that's the music. Then Zeppelin took you into it. What was the first track you mastered for somebody?
Oh, listen, man. It was this really horrible, fucking cheesy dance fucking thing. I can't. I've got to be honest with you, man. It was a long time ago.
You blacked that out really on purpose. You don't want me to look it up, was, do you?
No. Listen, my life is an open book, my friend. It's not one of those suppressed memory things. Trust me. When you've done so much shit in your life, it's like, how do you fucking remember everything? But no, man, it was a horrible fucking cheesy dancey thing. I'll find it. I promise you I'll track it down, and I'll fucking send you. We'll get some contact details later, and I'll send it to you. Yeah. Just don't worry, man. All my sins are fucking forgiven, man. It's all good, so don't worry about it.
I'm just trying to get into the mind of young Jack the Cub before he becomes Jack the Bear, master sound engineer. You know. And
yeah. Well, it's funny. You know, a lot of people ask me how did you get the name Jack the Bear. So let me tell you about how that happened. Yeah. I was on a subway train. I was on the subway. This is over in Toronto, Canada. And I was on the subway and coming home from a party with a friend of mine. And as we got on, these two guys were in the middle of an argument of some sort, because they were quite animated. And all I remember was this. I came in at this point of the argument where one guy said, "Hey, man, don't blame me. Blame Jack the Bear." And then he turned around and looked at me, and he pointed at me and said, "That guy, talk to him. He fucking did it, not me, man." Right? Now my friend looks at me and he said, "You're Jack the Bear, huh? You know what Jack the Bear is?" I said, "Nope." He goes, "Oh, man, well, Jack the Bear is some mythical dude that when things go wrong, you blame him. So you're a fuck up."
Oh, my God. So that just dubs you from the get go.
Absolutely. Sorry, thank you, honey. Oh, my God. Look how amazing my wife is. She's bought me the breakfast du jour.
Wonderful. What are we eating on there?
Scrambled eggs and spinach on gluten-free bread and the veggie and fruit slop, which is, you know, all part of raising your vibration, my friend.
Oh, that's it, man. The kale shake once a day, the Hulk shakes. I do those once in a while, too.
All that stuff. So, again, thanks to Rogan, you see. It's amazing, man. Like, without sounding like some little fucking prepubescent fucking schoolgirl, yeah, he's had a big influence on me. And he's influenced a lot of people. I mean, whether that guy realizes it or not, the impact he's made is phenomenal. And I'm sure they never set out to do that. And I'm sure he never had any kind of delusions of grandeur. But what a beautiful thing, man. That, again, a person that can just come out and be honest and be true to himself. You know, because that's what people want, man. People want honesty. People want real. People want sincerity. You know, people want to feel that shit. You know, we're all energetic beings, and we're all pick up on each other's vibration, and we're all attracted to certain things, you know, and realness and honesty and sincerity. You know, we're in a world where that, I don't want to be pessimistic and say it's lacking, but it's more challenging than ever now for that to come above, because, you know, and people need to look at themselves, Adam. You know, people, I've been mentored at the moment by a guy called Peter Sage. And Peter asked me to do an exercise which involves what he calls the pedestal exercise, and basically what it means is you looking at people that you admire and looking at the qualities that you like about them, similar to what this girl did a long time ago, but then saying, okay, look at examples in your life where you have demonstrated those qualities, And when you go through it, it's really interesting, man, because you realize, oh, hang on a minute, I'm actually quite special too. I'm actually, you know, I don't need to put this person up here. I mean, we live in a society, man, where we it's almost this insatiable need to idolize people, to put people up there. You know, I mean, Kim Kardashian, anyone? For fuck's sake, man.
Right.
Yeah, and that's nothing against Kim. Look, I'm sure that if I met her in real life, she's probably a sweetheart and a lovely person. Yeah, I'm sure I would love hanging out and having dinner with her and stuff, just as a normal person having a real, honest fucking conversation. Because for all we know, the media probably, you know, what we see is what the media want us to see, or fuck, who knows what. But nonetheless, I mean, what makes her any better than any other young girl out there?
Well, they aspire to it, man. You're right. And they're piss poor representations for, I think, to aspire to. I watched a documentary last night. I think it was Girls Wanted or something like that. And it was so sad. They were talking about, you know, the prostitution and – or not prostitution, sorry, porn, and how this guy has just sets up Craigslist ads and offers a free plane ticket to L.A. and a free place to live within his house with 5 or 6 bedrooms, where these young girls come out there with ideas of fandom and stardom. And with all these new performers, sex is just this thing you use from all these sex tapes that have made them famous. And so they go out there, man, with no love, this guy, if you will, and they're forced to, you know, they get paid, but then they start doing these bad porn things. But long story short, they cover how they last about 1 to 3 months. They end up doing this abusive porn stuff that sends them into this, you know, tailspin, and they come home. And they're looking up to these girls. Like, I mean, look, let's face it, Kim Kardashian, she put out a sex tape. I mean, that's what she did.
Yeah.
And if girls aspire to the fandom in this route, I mean, this documentary was just an example of how, you know, those kind of examples show that.
Yeah. Well, why do you think these little girls do that shit, man? It's daddy issues. It's looking for love in all the wrong places.
Oh, you should have seen how they reacted to the way the sweet talk on the porn sets, you know, would get them. It's disgusting, man. And having a 15-year-old daughter, I could not watch that and not just be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, I think the greatest thing any dad. I mean, I have a daughter who's 18 now, and I'm very proud of her. She's a very, balanced young lady now. And one of the things I was very conscious of, but also my boys too, is to just tell them every day, you're beautiful, you're perfect, you're amazing, you're a miracle, every day, because once they have that validation, and they know that they are beautiful and perfect because they are. Then they don't need to seek that. They don't need to, you know, with their boyfriends, they have to, you know, give them a blowjob in order to be liked, right. You know. And as I told my daughter, and let me tell you, I wasn't afraid to tell her. I said to her, you know what, sweetheart? She was 15 at the time, 16. And I said to her a man should be prepared to crawl 100 miles over razor wire, right, just to stand in your shit. That's the kind of commitment you need.
Yeah.
Right? And I know that's not very romantic and elegant, but, you know, and a bit extreme.
There's man dad stuff in that. I love it. I love it.
But I wanted to just make a point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And anything that she wants to do is always going to be on her terms. Whatever that first time is, I said, you choose the boy, the place, the setting. It's all on your terms. Trust me now. And as I said to her, there's nothing sexier to a man. I said, trust me, sweetheart, because daddy's a man, in case you haven't realized it. There's nothing sexier to a man than a woman that will not fuck straight away.
Yep.
Values, just boundaries, babe. Just you need your boundaries. You know, because you know what? As far as I was concerned, any woman that I was seeing, if they went out and fucked me on the first date, they're going to do it with someone else just as quickly. So, you know, if I want a woman or a relationship with that substance, I want to know that woman is a woman that has values, that has dignity, you know. That loves herself, that has self-worth. That's the kind of woman that any man really, really wants. So anyhow.
Well, you mentioned, you know, the dialogue when you said, you know, you're this, all these wonderful positive reinforcements you were telling them. And it made me think about, you know, when we're talking about the dialogue that we say to, you know, in our own minds, to ourselves about what we are and who we are. And, you know, what was your dialogue like pre-DMT to yourself, pre-self-esteem, pre-rebirth, if you will, and dialogue post?
Sorry, mate. I think it'd be fair to say that the dialogue before was just one of anxiety, self-doubt, very low self-worth. Even though I was successful in the eyes of the world, I never saw it. And I never thought that this can't really be happening, or this must be some kind of fluke. It's just, how can this be? Like, this is not really, I know I want it, but I couldn't accept it. I think that's more the point. I couldn't accept it. And so it was just a struggle. It was just, I was always on this fucking hamster wheel. And you know what? And again, I can't say that I'm completely off it. I just got one wheel on it now. You know, this is the thing. I think it's important that people know, and I tell people straight up, you know, when I go and do these talks, I don't present as if, you know what, I'm the all-knowing, completely cured sage. No, as I said, I have great solace in knowing I'm just as fucked up as you. I'm just as frail. I'm just as human. I've just gone a bit further down the track. I've learned a few more lessons, so I'm just sharing this with you. Yeah. So the difference now is basically it's more positive, and it's more believing in it. And I think I'm having more trust in knowing where I'm going. Yeah. Now, there's a feeling of more certainty that I'm here for a reason. I still haven't quite worked out exactly what that reason is, but there's a reason, and I'm trusting in that. And so I just go with it. I'm just going with it, man. And so now the talk is more positive. I still have my moments. Still have my doubts from time to time. Still question things from time to time. Again, you know, like I said, I'm not going to present some kind of bullshit, fucking sparkly, oh, my God, you know, I'm completely fucking enlightened. No, far from it. But it's a lot better. Before, it was just dark and shit and negative and but all in all, putting a facade of it being all great, okay? And that's something I did all my motherfucking life, Adam, all my life, you know. And I think still we all have these kind of facades to a degree, because I think different situations require different, you know, different. But the essence, yeah, is still there, is real, and you know, and I think, you know, as the saying goes, don't bullshit a bullshitter. People pick up on shit like that, man. People know, you know, when you're dealing with someone. I think instinctively we all kind of know, you know, who and what we're dealing with. So anyway, I hope that answers the question adequately for you, my friend.
Oh, man, it's adequate for your perception is mine, my brother. We're walking this wonderful, wild, amazing experience together. I think it's so cool that we can connect this way across the oceans, man.
I love it, man. And you know what? It's so nice to have real conversations with people. And I think it's important that we do all of this. We try and engage in that. You know, sometimes people struggle to find other people. But having this forum and having this invitation to do this, man, it's just beautiful. Because, and I think particularly amongst men, I think men in general struggle to sit down because again, we're conditioned to be men. We're tough. We don't have problems. Everything's fucking, even if we're fucking dying, even if we're going broke, even if fucking everything is, the world's turned to shit. Oh no, had an amazing month. Oh, fucking killed it, man. Fucking killed it, you know, fuck. 150 fucking percent of my fucking commission. Fucking, oh, aced it. Fucking aced it. You know? Oh,
bacon it. So you hopefully make it. It's true. We're taught that manly means resistance, as opposed to, you know, masculine being honorable or movable, you know, changeable and while still supportive.
Yeah, man. You know, and as I said, you said sometimes men sometimes a bit look at me and get a bit taken back because. Like I said, I'm a serial hugger, and not because I'm Jack the Bear. I'm just a hugger, man. You know, I think there's something really nice in expressing warmth to people, and most people with me at least are pretty good. But sometimes some men, look, I generally tend to kind of feel them out. I just don't indiscriminately go in there. But sometimes you can just see men from the start, and you just, okay, all right, I'm gonna let this one slide. You know, this guy's not ready for it. You know, but it's important, man. I mean, that's just me.
That's been hard for me, is to be able to not jump when someone starts that concrete belief thinking while condemning everyone around them. It's hard for me not to go, listen, man, you know what I mean? Like, I fail at that many, many times still.
You know what, Adam? Yeah, go. No, you go first. You go first.
Oh, no, it's off joke top, man. Go ahead, man.
No, I was just going to say, I think we have to understand that everyone's on a journey, man. And we're all on the same journey, I think. Everyone's at different stages. We're on the same train at different carriages. but ultimately we're all going to end up in the same place. That's so. And so while it's tempting to be able to try and tell people, hey, you know, hey, you slept, wake the fuck up or whatever.
That's how it feels, it, man.
You know, it's it's not our place because, you know, I used to be a serial rescuer, right? Mm. Particularly with women, right? And that stems back from when I was a kid because my dad was never at home because he was just a workaholic. And being 4 and 5 years old, I had to pretty much take care of my mom. Now, as I discovered later, my mother was a paranoid schizophrenic. So she would, I just thought my mum was just crazy, you know, just in a funny kind of way, you know, but yeah. And many times I'd have to sort of have to go to her and hug her and try and comfort her. And so that just went on in life. So I would want to rescue women all the time. But I realized later on that in most cases, I didn't need rescuing, certainly not from me. And if anything, most of the time it ended up getting me in more trouble than anything else. So I got over that and realized, okay, you're there. You're in this position because you've got life lessons to learn. My place is not to teach you those life lessons. You've got to fucking work it out for yourself. You know, I can be there. I can support you in some other ways, but I cannot intervene. That was the thing. By risking, I mean not just being supportive. Me making a decision and taking an affirmative action to say, I'm going to do this. You know, because that's what needs to be done. And that was not what needed to be done, Adam.
Enforcing their own perception.
Yeah, yeah. So, and again, I only got off that trend. I only got off that one recently myself. You know, as I said to you, I'm a late bloomer. A lot of things in my life came late in life, man. But I think I've learned to appreciate that because I come a little later in life, I was able to handle it better, understand it better, and absorb it more. And make it work in my life better. So I'm kind of grateful that a lot of these things came to me later in life.
Is that what the podcast, The Research Continues at Melbourne Real Podcast is about?
What I think at this stage, this is because it's still in its early stages where, you know, we're working through it, man. You know, the whole idea, again, you know, I'm going to be honest, the whole idea of the podcast was based, you know, modeled a bit on like Rogan's thing. And what did I like about Rogan's podcast? The fact that he had interesting dudes on. I love the fact that he had his friends on. You know, he was supporting his friends, his comedian friends, all his friends. You know, there was no real agenda about it. It was just let's get together, let's have some fun, let's get our friends on, let's have a laugh, let's support each other, let's give each other props, let's you know, tell each other about our gigs. Extend the network, get some cool people on that have some real conversations, you know. And so for us, it's kind of a similar thing. Martin, who's my co-host, I invited Martin on for another reason because I love the guy and he's very intelligent. And again, you know, if this is a vehicle that's going to help him with his music, perhaps, well, fucking why? Why not? Why shouldn't I fucking help him? You know, as the saying goes, we is bigger than me. And again, it's just on that, sorry, I keep coming back to it, but it's on that, the Rogan philosophy or what I saw, or at least what I perceived to be his philosophy. And so now it's just about just getting on some cool people. So just talk about all kinds of shit, whether it's music or health or spirituality or whatever. We're only 6 shows deep now, Adam. So, you know, it's still trying to find its feet. We're still trying to work it all out, you know. So there's no real like, okay, well, this is the, you know, this is the mission statement, you know, well, this is the agenda, if you will. Right now, it's just about having some fun with one of my best friends and trying to find some interesting people. Eventually we'd love to get some, you know, like as I said, our mission now, Joe Rogan's coming out next month. I'm putting it out there. I don't know, you're going to put it on YouTube. I don't know if anyone's watching this or listening to this, if anyone could, anyone knows Joe and likes what I've been talking about and feels that, you know, he could have some time for us. We'd be honored to have him on. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's out of my control. But
I love the podcast, man. I watch it on YouTube, actually. I put it up in the office when I'm doing some work. And I love it. You're following a similar idea. The last author you had on there was talking some lovely shit. I love that guy, man. He was so boisterous. I don't think you could get much of a word in. But he was going off.
But they're the best. You know what? They're the best. When we did that podcast, Martin and I looked at each other and we said, that was the best fucking podcast we've done so far.
Yeah, man.
Because it's not about us. yeah, we run the show, but there's nothing better than having someone on there who's knowledgeable, who's passionate, who knows their stuff, and who's a good orator as well, because, you know, Dr. Peter Dingle, you know, he's a speaker, and that's very evident in the way he spoke on the podcast. And it was great just to wind him up, let him go.
Yeah.
They're the best fucking guests, man. No need for too many questions, no need for too much fucking research, because he's going to fucking unleash it all for you, man.
He did too, man. I love that podcast. So everybody's listening, look up Melbourne Real on YouTube and check out Tony's podcast. I like listening to him, and I actually enjoy watching it. I don't watch that many podcasts.
Yeah, there's not much. We're pretty static. I mean, I just sit on one side, Martin's on the other, guest in the middle. You know, it's not really the most visually, you know, inspiring thing to see. But we just want to get the video element, because even though I think 80% of podcasts or more, I think are more audio people, and I can understand that. People put on their, you know, on a portable device and they check it out in the gym. You know, it's very hard to sit and watch something when you're on the train or, you know, whatever. But we like the video element of it, and that way people have the option of either or. But like I said, man, we're developing it. And I think at some stage that we're going to have another podcast, which will be called Melbourne Unreal, which will be a bit more of a music related one, you know.
All right.
So yeah. So I'll keep you in the loop as to how all that transpires, you know.
Yeah, let me know. You know, I'll tweet it and retweet it and put it out there with the show. I mean, I did it now, and let's see. I had there's one more thing I wanted to get to, but
go for it, man. Go for it. I got all the time you want.
You know, I love asking people on, because part of what I like to talk about is a life philosophy for people. And if I bring people on like yourself that, I don't know, I just, you feed me with the same passion similar to Rogan when I'm watching you, you know, just voice about your experience, tell your story, you know, it gets me excited, man. So, you know, what is your life philosophy?
Just be loving, be kind, be generous, and love yourself more than anything else. Learn how to love yourself. You know, but it's just to be a nice fucking person, man. Really, it's just basically that. Just be as nice as you can, and don't underestimate the little things you do for people. It's, you know, I think people sometimes think about charity as big, ostentatious kind of fucking, you know, things. And it's not like that at all. You know, opening the door for someone, letting someone in the traffic, you know, one day. You know, just little things, man, you know, is what makes people's day. And for the most part, people don't expect to get a kindness from anyone for the most part. So that's really my life philosophy, man. Just be fucking nice. Pretty simple.
You got to keep it simple. And, you know, for a guy also like you that lives the way you do, like I would say, you live in a cognitive rampage. You live with that passion and enthusiasm, kind of founded by a want to inspire and help other people. You know, and what it is you're doing in that philosophy of loving people. So I think a lot of people do confuse that chasing your dreams means this happily ever after. And you have been a man that has chased your dreams since 15 or younger, 13, when you made your awesome fucking rock and roll declarations, and now have lived it since then in between and still living it and changing every day. What would you tell that one who's, you know, thinking about chasing their dreams and think, all I got to do is follow what I love and all my dreams will come true?
Well, I think you pretty much wrapped it up. I can only echo that sentiment. And that is, I think be true to yourself. Be honest about what you want in life, and don't go with what you think people want you to be or what you think society wants you to be, because I lived that for a long ass fucking time and it gets you nowhere. It gets you nowhere. Even if you are deemed to be successful at doing it to the outside world, you've got to be happy on the inside. You've got to be happy in what you're doing. So I would just tell anyone who's a young kid out there, if there's something that you want to go for, it's your fucking birthright to be happy. That's what you're here for. You're here to be happy. You need to do what you want to do and what rocks your motherfucking world, yeah? Because time is the most precious resource that we all have. You know, money is great, but you can't exchange it, you can't swap it, you can't take it back to the fucking pawn shop. Once it's, you know, you can't do a shit. But time that's the most valuable fucking thing you've got. You really have money. It's the money, I should say. Yeah, you can make it, you can lose it. But time, once that day's gone, kid, it's fucking gone. And we all have a finite amount. Nobody knows. So that means that as each day goes by, as that hourglass fucking goes less and less, that means it's become scarce. When something becomes scarce, it becomes more fucking valuable. So make the most of it, kid. Make the most of it. It's your fucking birthright.
And on that motherfucking note, that is a Cognitive Rampage from your boy Tony the Jack Bear Mance, rock engineer and legend, music engineer and legend, now motivational speaker, backer of those young kids that need the help. My man, my now friend, Jack, man, we got to end it on that amazing rock and roll fucking rampage, my friend.
You got it. All right. Love you lots, man.
Hey, you're coming on, though, right? Again, you'll come on?
Anytime, man. You and I, we're brothers now, so... You know, we'll be. I'm sure we'll be doing the hangout off the Google Hangout, and who knows what you and I can come up with. But yeah, man, that's it. You're stuck with me now.
Oh, well, good. Well, I hope you're happy. You're stuck with me.
I think I'll deal with that. I think I'll manage it.
Two people: my wife and Tony. Well, my daughter sometimes. But man, thanks for joining me, brother. Anytime. Man. I can't wait to have you back whenever, man. You're welcome anytime.
I love you lots, buddy, and we'll have to get you on. We'll have to hook up some kind of Skype podcast for Melbourne Real, but we'll get you onto ours, and we'll do a video style one. So we'll get that happening.
I'm in anytime you need me, brother.
All right, my man. All right, listen. Have a good day. Thanks to those of you who are watching or listening. And hey, if anyone can get Joe Rogan on this fucking podcast with us, man, we would be eternally grateful.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? Speaking of, sorry before we jump, anywhere to get you, where to listen to you, where to find you, yeah, all that, all the fun.
Okay. Twitter is Jack_the_Bear on Twitter. Instagram, JackTheBear1063. My website is www.jackthebear.com.au. And if you want to drop, can I give an email if they want to drop me an email?
All you want, brother.
Okay, email is mastering@jackthebear.com.au. And if anyone wants to reach out, I'll be happy to say hi. And yeah, just connect with new friends. That'd be awesome.
Cool, my friend. Love you much. And for everybody listening, I appreciate you following the Rampage. Please look up Tony Jack the Bear. I'm Swimming Bear, man. That's my Native American name.
Oh, okay, nice.
I swear, nice. Man, it's all tattooed. The bear's up my arm with the native headdress and all.
Oh, I love it. This is there's mine.
Yeah, Jack the Bear, man. We really are spiritual brothers, my friend.
You better fucking believe it.
Oh man, until next time, man. Take care of on the other side of the world, brother.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. See you, buddy.
Later, buddy.
Hey, I want you to check out another podcast that I listen to with two friends of mine. That's my buddy Chris Fisher and his friend Jesse Cage in the FNK podcast. You can catch them at fisherandcage.com, but look them up on iTunes. They're a great podcast. I love listening to the fellas each week, but that's the FNK podcast.